Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
U.S. President Barack Obama opened his final nuclear security summit in Washington on Thursday. Expressing concerns over North Korea's nuclear weapons development and the possibility of dirty bombs from terrorists. Ahead of the summit, Obama met with South Korean President Park Geun-hye and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe to discuss the North Korean nuclear threat in the region. He said, "One of the topics now most on our minds is the issue of North Korea, and we are united in our efforts to deter and defend against North Korean provocations." The UN Security Council adopted a resolution to impose tough new sanctions on North Korea. The sanctions are meant to punish North Korea for its recent nuclear and long-range missile tests. The resolution will need China's cooperation since 90% of North Korean trade goes through China. The U.S. has been asking China to use its influence to limit North Korea's nuclear activities. Leaders at the summit are especially concerned about the security of nuclear materials and facilities in countries such as Pakistan. On Easter Sunday, a terrorist attack in Lahore killed more than 70 people. The Brussels terrorist attacks on March 22nd showed how dangerous terrorist groups like the Islamic State have become. After the attacks, Belgium has put armed guards at its nuclear facilities. Sharon Squassoni is an expert with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. She said, "While progress has been made to secure nuclear materials, there is still material out there, and the material that we're talking about is highly enriched uranium. The U.S. says the world has 2,000 metric tons of highly enriched uranium and separated plutonium in civilian and military programs." Ben Rhodes is the White House Deputy National Secretary Advisor. He said, "We know that terrorist organizations have the desire to get access to these raw materials and their desire to have a nuclear device."
At least 20 people died after part of a bridge collapsed in the Indian city of Kolkata. Anne Ball has more on this story.
Rescue workers tried to free as many as 100 people believed to be trapped under concrete and metal. Before rescue teams arrived, local residents and firefighters used their bare hands to try to rescue people trapped under the debris. Witnesses said many people and vehicles, including two buses carrying more than 100 passengers, were under the bridge when it fell. They also said construction workers had set up camps near the bridge site, where they would sleep and cook. The collapsed bridge is in a busy commercial area of Kolkata. Its location has made it difficult for rescue operations. Access to the area is blocked on both sides by buildings, and the streets are blocked with heavy traffic. Reuters reports that the chief minister of West Bengal, Mamata Banerjee, rushed to the scene of the collapse. She said that rescuing those trapped is her top priority. Banerjee said those responsible for the disaster will be punished. Yet she faces questions about the safety of the construction project. The Telegraph newspaper reported last November that Banerjee wanted the bridge, already 5 years overdue, to be completed by February. Project engineers said they were concerned over whether this would be possible, the newspaper said at the time. Construction workers had been on a strict schedule to complete the bridge. The disaster could affect the West Bengal election next month. An Indian company, IVRCL, was building the 2-kilometer bridge, its website said. IVRCL's director of operations said the company was not sure of the cause of the disaster. I'm Ann Ball.
The VOA Learning English Word Book has some new additions today. Some of the new words are running latte and hangry. Katie Weaver has Dan Friedel's report.
Some big news today here at VOA Learning English. We are adding new words to our 1,500-word word book. The first edition of the word book came out in 1962. Every now and then, we update it. Some words are added and some are taken away. We only decided to add these words after careful thought. We think they will be useful as your English improves. Here are the word book's new words. Dadgum, running latte, and hangry. Have you ever used these words or heard them before? In case you have not, here is what they are and how to use them. Dadgum is a word used to express dissatisfaction or anger. For example, if you are hanging a picture on the wall and hit yourself with the hammer, you could yell, "Dadgummit!" Sometimes coffee drinkers are said to be running latte. A latte is a coffee drink made with hot milk. The delicious drink is spelled L-A-T-T-E. Sometimes you might have to stop for one on your way to work. When the coffee stop delays your arrival, you can say, "I ran latte." Hangry is used to describe a person who is hungry and angry because of it. Hangry people are sometimes hard to be around until they get something to eat. You will be hearing these words in our news and feature programs. We urge you to use them also in your expanding English vocabulary.
Katie, wait. There's a new expression to add to the word book.
What is it, Dan?
It's April Fool's. Today is April Fool's Day. It is a day when people in many countries play fun tricks on each other. Some historians think the day goes back thousands of years to ancient Rome. These words we just mentioned, they're real, but they are informal. They are not yet in the Learning English word book, but you can find hangry in the Oxford Dictionary's website. We hope you enjoyed our little joke and that you have a great April Fool's Day. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Police in Pakistan have conducted many raids in Punjab province after a suicide bombing in Lahore on Sunday. Christopher Jones Cruz brings us more.
Police and security forces have arrested more than 200 suspected Islamist militants after a suicide bombing in Lahore on Sunday. The attack took place at a crowded public park in the capital of Punjab, the most populous province of the country. At least 72 people, many of them Christians celebrating Easter, were killed. 29 children were among the dead. More than 300 people were wounded. Tuesday, the provincial law minister told reporters that more than 5,000 people were detained. He said they later released all but 216 people. Police and special counter-terrorism units have taken part in many raids across Punjab. Pakistani officials said intelligence agencies and troops also carried out raids against suspected sleeper cells and terrorist hideouts in several cities of Punjab. Jamatul Ahrar, a group that once was part of the Pakistani Taliban, claimed responsibility for the bombing. It said the suicide attacker targeted Christians. A spokesman promised that the group would carry out more attacks in Punjab. The threat caused officials to temporarily close all of the public parks in the province. The spokesman also threatened to attack local media. "Everyone will get their turn in this war, especially the slave Pakistani media. We are just waiting for the appropriate time," the spokesman said on the social networking site Twitter. The Easter Sunday bombing was the deadliest attack in Pakistan since a raid by militants on a school in Peshawar in December 2014. Almost 150 people were killed, most of them children. The Pakistani Taliban and groups linked to it have attacked the government for more than 10 years. Tens of thousands of people have been killed in the attacks. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Syrian forces, backed by Russian airstrikes, have taken back control of the ancient city of Palmyra. Dan Friedel has the story.
When the Islamic State militants blew up the Temple of Bel in the ancient city of Palmyra in August 2015, experts feared they would destroy many important artifacts from the first century. UNESCO considered the 2,000-year-old temple one of the most important buildings of the World Heritage Ancient City. The UN called the destruction of the ancient temples and tombs in Palmyra a war crime. Syrian forces, backed by Russian airstrikes, took back control of Palmyra. Now that the city is open, experts say the artifacts are in better shape than many predicted. They say up to 80% of the ancient ruins in Palmyra have survived. Mamoun Abdul Karim is the Syrian Antiquities Director. He was able to investigate the 2,000-year-old ruins for the first time after Syrian forces recaptured the city in late March. The Islamic State militants held the ancient city for about 10 months. He said many artifacts, columns, arches, and statues have survived, but there is damage to surrounding streets, baths, and fences. Roger Michael is an American expert from the Institute for Digital Archaeology in Great Britain. Michael promised that he would show a Temple of Bel arch recreated from a 3D printing in April. Michael explained that 3D printing can use the same combination of materials, sand, water, and sodium bicarbonate, that ancient builders used to build the temple. It can even use the dust left over from buildings destroyed by IS. One problem the experts will face is the lack of detailed source material, like 3D images. But they say some of the information can come from two-dimensional photographs. There is already some video shot by drones and photographs made by satellites, but many of the sites are not yet accessible because of landmines and traps left by IS fighters. I'm Dan Friedel.
Scientists are working to develop unmanned planes that can gather information from different levels of the Earth's atmosphere. The information will help weather experts increase the accuracy of their forecast. Christopher Jones-Cruz has more.
Scientists are developing unmanned planes, called drones, that can gather weather information from the atmosphere. The drones could help weather experts improve their predictions. Meteorologists say their weather forecasts would be more accurate if they had information from many parts of the atmosphere. They already place satellites, drones, and balloons at different altitudes, and they use radar and gather information from devices on towers. But that information only helps experts predict weather conditions for the next few days. It does not help predict changes in the next few hours. This is very important where sudden, violent storms happen. So scientists at Oklahoma State University are developing new drones to gather information from more parts of the Earth's atmosphere. This will help forecasters improve predictions about local weather conditions. Jamie Jacob is an aerospace engineer and a professor of mechanical and aerospace engineering at Oklahoma State University. He leads the university's Unmanned Systems Research Institute. He and other scientists at the university are developing small drones that do not cost a lot of money, but can fly for hours, gathering information from many atmospheric levels. He spoke to VOA on Skype.
Oklahoma is a really good example because even though that we're already a very weather dynamic state, Oklahoma only has two balloon launches a day, one at dawn and one at dusk, from a single location in the state, and that's where all the weather forecasting information comes from. So that data is really sparse, and it's difficult for meteorologists that are developing these forecasting models to get very good idea about how that weather is changing from these very limited number of data points.
Philip Chilson is a professor of meteorology at Oklahoma State University. He says the drone program should give researchers a low-cost way of understanding storms better and improve computer-based forecasting. The scientists have developed a round drone that can fly, hover, roll on the ground, and then take off again. These abilities are needed for a drone to fly in storms. Professor Chilson says the drone can measure atmospheric conditions, send live video to forecasters, and help search for people hurt in storms. He spoke to VOA on Skype.
Our real goal is to try to develop systems that really, I don't want to say replace, but there may be that possibility of replacing weather balloons, but currently augmenting them, so increasing the capabilities.
Researchers say they still have a lot of work to do before the drones are ready. That includes making sure the drones know how to stay away from other planes. They say it could be 2 years until a drone can safely examine Earth's lower atmosphere. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
English learners know that prepositions can be difficult to master. There are 94 one-word prepositions in English and about 56 prepositions with two or more words, called complex prepositions. This adds up to 150 chances to make mistakes. We cannot, of course, explain the small differences among all 150 prepositions here. We can, however, provide you with a few explanations of different prepositions that use one particular verb, provide. When provide is followed by an indirect object, English speakers use the preposition with. Providing someone with something means to give something wanted or needed. Here is an example sentence written by U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama. Room to Read provides girls with scholarships that cover the cost of housing, food, and books. In this sentence, girls is the indirect object and scholarships is the direct object. Another preposition with the same verb is provide for. Provide for, in general, means to make whatever is necessary for someone available to him or her. We often use this expression when we talk about parents providing for their family. In a VOA Learning English story about a Cambodian-American filmmaker, we used the preposition in this way. She says, changes such as migration away from rural areas are allowing more women to find work and provide for their families. This preposition can also be used in other ways. Provide for can mean to make it possible for something to happen in the future. For example, in our story about water shortage in California, we wrote, they say California needs to find a way to provide for the growing need for water. When provide is followed by a direct object, English speakers can use the prepositions to or for. Provide something to or for someone means that you deliver or give something to someone. For example, the company provides health insurance to all of its employees. Health insurance is the direct object, and employees is the indirect object. In this example, we also could have said, the company provides health insurance for all of its employees. Both these sentences are correct, but it is more common to use provide something for than provide something to someone. The expression using to is rather new to American English.
according to the internet application Google Ngrams. Google Ngrams is an app that shows general changes in English usage by searching all the words in Google's digital books. The graph on Ngram for provide something to shows it was hardly ever used before 1960. Compare that to the Ngram graph for provide something for. The expressions appear much more often. The expressions also appeared much earlier, around 1920. They were used then almost as often as they are used now. Understanding English prepositions can be difficult, even for native speakers. But we hope we have been able to provide assistance to all our listeners and readers. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Australia's National Coral Bleaching Task Force says the country's Great Barrier Reef is facing the worst mass bleaching event in its history. The reef is a United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization World Heritage Site. It has more than 400 species of coral and 1,500 kinds of fish. It is the only reef that is a heritage site, a place that is named by UNESCO as having special cultural or physical significance. The reef is along the northeastern coast of Australia. It is three-quarters the size of the Western American state of California. Bleaching happens when sea temperatures rise. Higher temperatures cause the coral to force out colorful algae. The coral becomes white. If the water temperature falls, the process could reverse. Algae could return to the coral. If it does not, the coral could die. Researchers examined aerial surveys of more than 500 reefs north of the city of Cairns. The researchers said most of the reefs suffered from severe bleaching. Terry Hughes leads the National Coral Bleaching Task Force. He said, "This has been the saddest research trip of my life. We flew for 4,000 kilometers in the most pristine parts of the Great Barrier Reef and saw only four reefs that had no bleaching. The severity is much greater than in earlier bleaching events in 2002 or 1998," he said. Hughes also said, "It's still too early to tell just what the overall outcome will be. We will continue to conduct underwater surveys along the Great Barrier Reef in the coming months as the full impact of this mass bleaching event unfolds." Hughes said the most severe bleaching was in the northern part of the reef. He said the southern part was not as affected because of cloudy weather that cooled the water temperatures. He said the bleaching was likely made worse by the strong El Niño event in the Pacific Ocean. The Washington Post reports there have been three recorded mass bleaching events in 1998, 2010, and this year. All three took place at the same time as the El Niño event.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.